And welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have Kim Andrews. She is the Executive Director of the Japan America Society of Greater Philadelphia. Welcome.
Hello, Laura.
Let's get started with what is the society? Just give us the elevator speech first.
The Japan America Society connects Japan and the Greater Philadelphia area. So we date back to 1982 is when we were founded, and we connect Japan and the Philadelphia region through Shafuso Japanese House and Garden, our historic site, which has about 45,000 visitors a year. We produce the Subaru Cherry Blossom Festival, which is in the springtime in West Fairmount Park, and we have between 10 and 20,000 visitors to that event. We conduct a U.S.-Japan business and public policy program series, and then we do additional Japanese art, business, and cultural programming. So we serve about 70,000 people a year. We're a small nonprofit, but we really attract a lot of people. It's an interesting connection between Japan and Philadelphia, and people like to find out about it.
And what area do you represent?
We represent the greater Delaware Valley. So that goes up to the Lehigh Valley, out through Trenton, Harrisburg, down to Wilmington, into Delaware, southern New Jersey. For us, our audience comes from all those regions, our regional audience that comes out to Shafuso and the Cherry Blossom Festival. The Japanese American heritage folks, there's not that many of them in this region. On the West Coast, because it's close to Japan, is my theory, there are many Japanese American residents and lots and lots of Japanese art and culture. So here on the East Coast, we have fewer Japanese historic sites, Japanese cultural activities, Japanese religious organizations. So it tends to be a larger draw of people. So we're lucky enough to know people from all over the region.
So this is actually like a national organization or individual chapters.
Yeah, there are 37 Japan America societies across the country, and we're all independent, but we work closely together and we collaborate on programs, and sometimes there'll be Japanese performers that come here and they'll travel from one city to the next, coordinating with the Japan America societies there. So it's we get together for a big conference one time a year, and it's a great way for us to keep the friendship going between Japan and the United States, that we have this long history, but we need to keep it fresh and keep it going.
Before the show began, I was asking after Kobe, which is Philadelphia's sister city. Almost all the cities around here have some Japanese counterpart.
Yeah, many American cities, small, large, have sister cities in Japan. Japanese cities and prefectures, which are the equivalent of states, really like to have active arrangements with foreign cities, and the United States connection is the biggest. So here, Wilmington has a sister city. I know Bethlehem does. Harrisburg does. Reading certainly does. They have a pagoda there. And in Philadelphia, ours is Kobe, which is a city in the Kansai region, which is in the center south of Japan. It's a port city, and it's about the same size as Philadelphia. I visited there for the first time in June, and I felt right at home. It was like being in Philadelphia, only on the ocean, with more ocean liners.
So the population here, is it a diverse all age groups? Are we seeing is it growing by any chance?
It's pretty stable. But our audience is a general audience, really. So we have Japanese Americans who like to connect to us because it harkens back to their heritage, and we work very hard to make sure that we're representing Japanese culture authentically. Our board has many Japanese and Japanese American representatives on it, but we want to not just serve Japanese heritage folks, but the general population, that the connection between Japan and Philadelphia doesn't belong to Japanese Americans. It's Philadelphia's heritage. It's all of our heritage. So it's something for everyone to really embrace and understand, that our connection to Japan in this region goes back to 1860, which is, you know, it's way back there. Japan opened to the West in the 1850s. So this region was one of the first that was visited by a Japanese delegation, and the connections have just continued since then.
Was the centennial celebration like a boost to this particular region?
Oh my gosh. The 1876 Centennial Exposition was held in Philadelphia, and it was huge. About 10% of the American population visited the exposition, but it really put Philadelphia on the map as a 19th century industrial powerhouse. There were so many new inventions that were exhibited there that were from Philadelphia originally, but it was also the first World Fair that Japan participated in a large scale. So the first Japanese garden was built actually at the site of Shofuso Japanese House and Garden. So in 1876, we have the first Japanese garden in North America and structure. And then Japan also had exhibition of arts and culture, and they came to look at our industry. So Japan had been more or less a feudal society till they opened to the West in the 1850s. They came to Philadelphia, and Baldwin locomotives from Philadelphia were some of the first trains that went into Japan, and other industrial machinery were some of the first purchases that started to industrialize Japan in the 1870s and 80s. And they all came straight from 1876 Centennial Exposition.
I knew that we had a special bond with Japan, but I hadn't understood that we helped to industrialize the country.
Yeah, and actually next year we are doing a year of programming called Japan Philly 2020, and we're highlighting Japanese art, business, and culture through the region and partnering with other institutions. One of our partner or institutions is the Independent Seaport Museum, and they're putting together an exhibition about the connection between Philadelphia and Japan in seafaring and shipbuilding, that the cramped shipyards, which used to be down on the Delaware River, built some of the earliest ships that Japan purchased, westernized ships, and then battleships also, and the relationship continued into the 20th century. So they're finding photos and other archival evidence that'll be on exhibition of how important Philadelphia was to Japan's seafaring industry.
And it's interesting, especially since you'd mentioned that us being on the East Coast, we're not exactly easy to get to for Japan, especially in that era.
Yeah, it was a long way for Japanese to come. It was a long way for Philadelphians to get back to Japan. In fact, the first group that came in 1860, it was a Japanese diplomatic mission. They took a ship from Japan to the West Coast. They went to San Francisco, and then they came to the East Coast. And how they did that was they took a boat down to the Panama Isthmus. This is before the Panama Canal was there. And they traveled by land over that very narrow portion of between the continents. And then they hopped on a ship on the other side and took a ship up to Washington, Philadelphia, and New York. So even before the Panama Canal, they had to figure out a way to get across the continent. And the easiest way, apparently, was taking a ship to the Panama Isthmus and crossing it by land and picking up a ship on the other side.
And then how did Shofuso House come about? And then let's talk about that history, because actually it existed as a separate entity. And then you merged into the Japan-America Society.
Yeah, Shofuso is here in West Fairmount Park because that first Japanese garden in 1876 was there. So in 1876, the garden was installed, and there was a structure that was installed. After the fair was over, it all went fallow. It was there, but kind of falling apart. No one took care of it. And then around the turn of the century into the 1900s, John Morris and Samuel Vox, who were Philadelphia city leaders, determined that they wanted to renovate the area. So John Morris paid a Japanese landscape designer to put a Japanese garden there. So that was the second Japanese garden at the location. And they got a Buddhist temple gate, a Japanese structure that had been at the St. Louis World's Fair. All these World's Fairs come into play, and brought that to where Shofuso is today. And it was there. So a Japanese garden, a Japanese structure. Philadelphians loved it. If you look on eBay, you can see postcards and photographs of people taking pictures in front of this beautiful Japanese site. The hemlines are going up and down. Cars are getting bigger and smaller. Until 1955, when the temple gate was actually being renovated, and it caught fire and burned. So that left this historic Japanese site with no structure. Okay, switch to New York. So in 1953, Arthur Drexler and John D. Rockefeller, in the post-war years after World War II, John D. Rockefeller had been very active in helping Japan redevelop and reindustrialize. But he wanted to kind of bring a sense of the finer high points of Japanese art and design to the United States. So he and Arthur Drexler had a house built in Japan, Shofuso, to be exhibited, believe it or not, at the Museum of Modern Art for a year and a half in Manhattan. The Japanese government paid for the house as a gesture of goodwill to the American people, a gift of friendship. It was built with traditional materials and traditional techniques, and then it was disassembled, reassembled in Manhattan. And then after a year and a half, when our beautiful temple gate here was burned. It was brought to Philadelphia in 1957. A third garden then was installed at that same site. And here we are today. So we have a beautiful traditional style Japanese house and the third ranked Japanese garden in North America at our site. And I can tell you they will be, that's what we have. We're taking care of them. We're not going to switch them out ever again.
No matches.
Right.
So you keep mentioning Japanese garden. What makes it a Japanese garden?
Japanese gardens, they have very unique design principles. There are very few different types of plants in a Japanese garden. In American or Western style gardens, like an English style garden, there'll be, you know, profusions of all different kinds of flowers and bushes. There tend to be wider expanses of the same plantings in Japanese gardens. Our Japanese garden has topographical elements that represent Japan. So we have islands and coves and hills and mountains. So they aren't teeny versions of it, but they're kind of a representation of what is in Japan itself. And asymmetry is a big part of Japanese gardens. So it's the idea of taking what is natural and beautiful and perfecting it and keeping it in scale in an enclosed space so that in a way we can enjoy the beauty of larger nature right in front of us.
And this is open year-round, the garden?
We're open after October. We're open on weekends into December. And then we reopen Wednesday through Sunday in March. So in order to go into the house, you have to remove your shoes. It's a traditional Japanese house with tatami mats, which are inch and a half thick straw mats. And so in Japan, partially for preservation, but for cleanliness and respect and the sense of leaving the outside world behind, visitors always remove their shoes when they enter a Japanese home. And we demand that of our visitors for those reasons, to protect the site. But it's open, and it gives an opportunity for anybody to experience what the finer points of Japanese art and design are.
And is that what the house actually represents? Is it like a scale of the larger, I'm using my hands here to gesture, the larger Japanese etiquette and culture and attitude?
Well, the house is built in a very traditional style, in the style of a 17th century estate house. So there are not many structures like this left, but there are contemporary structures that are similar. And since the house was built as an exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art, it puts together a couple different architectural styles. So the idea is for visitors to be able to come in and gain a sense of what contemporary Japanese culture is by experiencing traditional Japanese culture. So the tea ceremony is a good example. We have a tea house and tea is conducted regularly. Well, the precepts of tea in Japan are kind of the finer points of even contemporary culture today, of humility and respect and cleanliness. So a lot, since Japan is such an ancient culture and also was closed for many years, the finer points of how human beings can live their lives carried forward today. So those same qualities are in Japan. You go to Tokyo, it's fairly clean, it's orderly. It's a very traditional environment in a very modern world.
In Fairmount Park on Montgomery Drive.
We're at the intersection. You can come in on Montgomery Drive, Montgomery and Belmont Avenue, right next to the Police Touch Museum.
People keep forgetting just how important that area was with the Centennial Expo. And so few things survive from that period that was so important to our history. Memorial Hall, where the Police Touch Museum is. And then generation or two later, Shofusu House, marking where the Japanese were.
Yeah, the Centennial Exposition, and really 19th century in Philadelphia has gotten short shrift. Philadelphia, we talk about our Revolutionary War history, and, that's certainly important. I grew up in a 250-year-old house, but the 19th century Philadelphia was an industrial giant and did have international connections. Sometime a native Philadelphian, and I know Philadelphians sometimes were down on ourselves for being parochial, but there really have been international connections from the beginning that are important and that helped form what we are here today in the region.
Find out more about Shofusu House and the Japan-America Society of Greater Philadelphia at japanphilly.org. org. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we are talking to Kim Andrews. She is the executive director of the Japan America Society of Greater Philadelphia. And so this is a merge of the Shofuso House and the society. And you do a lot of programming, cultural and also economic. Have at her.
Well, I've been...
Parse that down however you want.
I started out as the executive director of Shofuso almost 10 years ago, which is time creeps up. It's hard to believe. And Shofuso was very underpromoted, and the city didn't really, the residents of the region didn't really know about it. We had about 10,000 visitors that first year and quite a small budget and few staff members. And I, as a native Philadelphian, I identified this connection to the Centennial Exposition, which to me makes the connection to the history of the city, that even though this is a Japanese historic site, it's Philadelphia's history. So as I don't come from the world of Japanese culture. I came from art and museums and conservation. But history is one of my favorite things. And, that this is a piece of Philadelphia history became first and foremost in my mind. And how are we going to tell people why this is important? So I was able to work with my board and expand our visitation, improve the conservation. It's difficult to care for a Japanese garden and structure, not in Japan. And as we grew, the Japan America Society, which was a sister organization, their executive director decided that she needed to retire. So many people believed we were the same organization anyway. So we took it upon ourselves to merge into one organization. So Shofuso, which had been my primary responsibility, and my master's degree is in art conservation and preservation, so that's right up my alley, is that we brought in all this additional programming. And it's been just amazingly successful. And it's been amazing to bring all these areas together. So we now take care of Shofuso and raise money for that, the maintenance, which is very costly. But we do the Subaru Cherry Blossom Festival, which is so fun and gratifying. I love caring for a historic site. It's important, and I can feel that every day. But a giant festival with 15,000 people having a great time, that's, as a staff member, that's a feel-good event and fun as anything. So we've really been able to continue to expand who we serve to tell our story.
When I asked earlier, where do we see Japan in Philadelphia? And we sure do with the cherry blossoms.
Yeah, starting in 1926, Japan, they had already donated cherry blossoms to Washington, D.C., but Japan donated 1,000 cherry trees to us here in Philadelphia. And many of those trees are still in place in the Horticulture Center in West Fairmont Park around where Shofuso is. And you can see more on West River Drive and East River Drive, Kelly and Martin Luther King Drive to, I guess, more modern people. And then near the Art Museum also. And the Japan America Society, we took it upon ourselves in 1992 to plant even more cherry trees. So we actually planted an additional 1,000 trees. So all told, Philadelphia has more cherry trees than Washington, D.C., and we do have our beautiful, picturesque cherry scenery around Shofuso and there behind the Please Touch Museum, again, lining both sides of the Schuylkill River. And other regions in the area have cherry blossoms, too. In Camden, there's cherry blossoms, and there's a cherry blossom festival, a small festival that goes on in Bethlehem, in the Lehigh Valley. There's some cherry trees. There's some Japanese corporations up there, so they have a small cherry blossom festival. So different areas have had their own, kind of smaller scale connections to Japan, not just Philadelphia, which is the biggest city in the region, but, everybody everywhere across the region has been touched by this in some way.
And then so you have the when does the cherry blossom festival take place?
Well, next year we're expanding it to a 2-day festival. So it's been one day in April, and next year it's going to be on April 4th and 5th, Saturday and Sunday, a 2-day festival in West Fairmount Park. We have traditional performances, 2 or 3 stages, vendors, food, crafts, all traveling entertainment. There's fashion shows. And the best part is that it's underneath the cherry trees. So some cherry blossom festivals are in parking lots or, more distant locations. That we really consider our cherry blossom festival to be one of the most authentic festivals outside of Japan, because the area in the Horticulture Center and Arboretum around Shofuso and Fairmount Park has there's 500 cherry trees right outside our door. So people bring blankets and picnic. It's not just a, you know, people mob together looking at stages. There's small, quiet areas where people can get away and enjoy the trees. So it's a great, great event. And it, you know, from doing this all these years, it's gratifying to know that now Philadelphia is kind of, that is a marker of spring for the region, that when our Cherry Blossom Festival is happening, people start to know they should look for cherry blossoms and enjoy that moment.
And, well, you do programming throughout your year. We're winding it down for this year, obviously, but you do fabulous events throughout the year your tea ceremonies, which sell out all the time. And when you hear of one, jump on a ticket right away, obviously. But so for 2020, you're going to have, I'm going to guess, again, I'm throwing it over to you here, special programming and events. And you're not just, again, cultural and art. You are also business and economics and education. So go for it.
Yeah, so we have a corporate corporate program. So there are a good number of Japanese or Japanese-affiliated companies in the region, some quite large like Subaru of America or Tokyo Marine, Philadelphia Insurance, which is here, and some smaller ones. And we connect them together. So they're oftentimes Japanese expat employees. So just on a very basic networking level, it's really gratifying. But it's a way for us to give these corporations connections. And we have a regular business programs to bring people together for networking and talk about intellectual property concerns and import-export concerns. So that's one portion. We also, for just regular people, we have Japanese language classes, which are going to be starting up again in January at the William Way Center in Center City. And that's they're all different levels. It's for working adults. It's once a week, so it's a little tough to sit in on a Temple University language class when you're a working adult. But anybody who's interested can find more information about those classes at japanphilly.org. And we have a conversation club that's going to be at the Free Library on the Parkway starting in January also. That is just, it's a free program for people to come together to learn Japanese and English. So it's learners of both languages coming together to converse. So those are some additional programs that we're doing that we do to kind of engage the whole region. Our Japan Philly 2020 program, though, is really big. We're partnering with other institutions that are going to be putting on exhibitions and performances. The Rosenbach Library and Museum is going to be putting on an exhibition of an important Japanese manuscript. As I said, the Independent Seaport Museum is going to be exhibiting objects and artifacts from the Japanese shipping industry that came out of Philadelphia. The Barnes Foundation is having Japanese performances, and University of Pennsylvania is having a symposium. I could go on and on. And then for us, the year is going to be a big, big year. We are not just making the Cherry Blossom a two-day event, which is big for us, but we are going to be conducting an exhibition at Shafuso called Shafuso and Modernism. And this is a larger scale program than we've ever done before. We're partnering with the George Nakashima Woodworkers and Raymond Farm Living Art and Design Center. They're both out in New Hope. The Shafuso's architect, his name is Junzo Yoshimura, and he was actually a mid-century modernist. He built Shafuso in a traditional style, but he's well known for mid-century modern architecture. He was good friends with George Nakashima, who was a Japanese-American woodworker and designer, and his family's studio is in New Hope. And then Antonin and Noemi Raymond, who are a designer and architect who were very well known in Japan. Well, this kind of triangle of creativity of a Japanese architect, a Japanese-American designer, and then an American designer and architect, this transcultural friendship kind of really strongly influenced mid-century modern architecture and design. And we're going to be exploring that at Shafuso and creating a new interpretation and content around this that hasn't really been explored, which shows how important this region has been, you know, to international design.
You know, I'd forgotten the furniture angle about that. I mean, I think everybody realizes how important the Japanese influence was on mid-century. You could argue that they created it, that aesthetic. But I forgot about the New Hope and that region with Japanese wood furniture.
Yeah, it's and right up near Nakashima Studio, the woodworker, which is still a working studio. George Nakashima's daughter, Mira Nakashima, is an architect and designer and woodworker herself, and so she operates it. But the site is not just a kind of a woodworking compound, but it's a historic site also. The buildings there were built by George Nakashima, and it is on the historic register, so they have tours there. George Nakashima, he and his family were from Washington State originally. They were imprisoned in an internment camp in Wyoming during World War II as Japanese Americans on the West Coast were almost wholesale imprisoned. And it was Antonin and Noemi Raymond that reached out and were able to get them out of the incarceration camp and brought them to New Hope. So, you know, right there, that kind of friendship between an American and Japanese Americans that ended up in this design work just is a slice of what happened in the United States and the two sides of the imprisonment of American citizens and then Americans who worked to release those citizens.
What other kind of programming? You know, we're winding down. 2-minute warning. So what else is going on? Over the course of this, will you be addressing history and politics in the year?
There is actually going to be an exhibition at the Fleischer Art Memorial about Japanese Americans in the region who had been imprisoned in internment camps and their experience on the West Coast before they were imprisoned, their experience while they were in these internment camps. And then we're going to be talking specifically about Philadelphians who had gone through this experience, and then so Japanese Americans who then came to our region. And that's going to include Mira Nakashima. She was, you know, this is just goes to show how much in recent memory this is. She was imprisoned as a child, and she remembers what that was like, and she remembers what it was like for her family to come to Bucks County and, you know, leave Washington State behind, go to Wyoming, and then come to Bucks County and have a fresh start and a new start, and how difficult that was. And you know, certainly as an adult, she's processed that. So there's going to be a photographic exhibition and some panels talking about that at the Fleischer Art Memorial in South Philadelphia.
Is all of this on your website?
Yes, it is. So JapanPhilly.org has all this information about the art business and culture and about Japan Philly 2020 next year. And hopefully our goal is that everybody will hear about Japan Philly 2020 next year while it's happening. The Tokyo Olympics are going on, so we want to focus all of the region's eyes on these wonderful connections between our Greater Philadelphia and Japan.
It tells the story of not just of Japan's awakening as an industrial state, but Philadelphia's world place as well.
Yes, and we're recently named Philadelphia a World Heritage City, which I think here in the United States we don't understand how important that is, but back in Japan that's really important. So we're a city and a region that's on the move, and Japan is a longtime friend.
Can I ask, do we get a lot of Japanese visitors?
We do, actually, and we are hoping to get more. We're working with Philadelphia International Airport and the City and State Commerce Departments to get a direct flight from Philadelphia International Airport to Japan, even a couple times a week. I can say it would actually change the life of almost every stakeholder that interacts with me.
Well, from your lips. So again, for all the information about hours that you are open. And again, we're winding down for this season, but there's still plenty of time to visit for hours and information about how to get there. And then, of course, all the fabulous things that will be happening for what's it called again?
Japan Philly 2020.
Japan Philly 2020. Go to the website and you're going to find all of this information there. JapanPhilly.org. JapanPhilly.org for the Japan America Society of Greater Philadelphia. And today we were talking to its executive director, Kim Andrews. Kim, thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Laura.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.